Live via the World Wide Web, it's Rock Line. The show where you interview the biggest stars in Wizard Rock. Rock Line is brought to you by Area 51 Design. If you need a website, you need Area 51. I'm Denny, and tonight we have a very special show for y'all. In the studio tonight is Marked as His Equal. And if you want to leave questions for next week's band, Danny Dementor, please send your email questions to Rockline. That is WROCKLINE at darkwizardradio.com.
When you hear the mention of the band Marked as His Equal, there's absolutely no doubt who you're listening to. This is one of the very best bands in Wizard Rock. We have Mark in the studio with us tonight. Welcome to Rockline, Mark.
Hey, what's going on, man?
All right, well, this is the first actual episode. The first one I did was my CD, and then I did an interview with Hagrid last week. That was fun, all the way from Hogsmeade. First thing I want to throw out there is, I know you read the book, you finished it pretty quickly. What did you think?
I loved it. I've talked to several people, and not everybody agrees with me, but I loved it. I felt it was a... It sounds not as cool as I'd like it to, but I felt it was a very satisfying conclusion. I felt we got the answers to most of the things we wanted answered, certainly all the big questions, and I felt really good about it.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I can't understand that people wouldn't have liked the way that came out. Everybody knew that Harry had to die, and in a way he did, but it, you know, kind of wrapped up his life, so I thought it was a very, very, very good story.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
All right, well,
go ahead.
You're going to Prophecy this weekend. That's coming up weekend. I'm going to miss it. I'm very upset about that. But who are the bands that you're going to be playing with?
I am playing with Celestial Warmbottom and Cash Love on Thursday night at 10 o'clock in the Common Room, which is right after the Big Wizard Rock concert on Thursday night with Harry and the Potters and Marina Slugum. So it should be a really, really, really fun show. Jason and Cash Love, I've seen perform. I've never seen Celestial Warmbottom, but their stuff is great, so I'm looking forward to playing with them. And actually, it's kind of cool. While I'm there, Devin from the Owl Post, who I did a collaboration with on my record, is going to be there. So we're going to be able to do our collaboration live, which is very neat.
That's going to be very cool. I know you did your first show a couple weeks ago. How did that go?
That went really well. I played at the Night Bus in Mission Valley when the Night Bus was here promoting for Deathly Hallows, and that was a blast. And then a couple weeks later, I played another show at the same library with the Remus Lupins, which was a great time. And then, of course, a release party. So,
yeah, that would have been great. How was it playing with the Remus Lupins? I know I got both of his CDs, so how'd that go?
Well, I mean, they're so much better live than they are on the CD, and that says a lot because their CDs are so great. You know, I mean, when he comes out there, that Alex and the rest of the guys, that's Tyler and Toby, they're so good, and they gave us everything they had. They did not leave anything not on the stage. I mean, they came out there, and the crowd was relatively small. The show got set up kind of late, and there was no way to, you know, promote it real well, and so not a whole lot of people came, but man, they didn't care, and they just gave us everything they had. They're amazing to watch live, so that was a really good time.
Well, that's what Wizard Rock's all about anyways. I mean, it's about giving your heart and soul to everything. So
that's right.
All right, I know you got your CD is released now, or is it still on pre-order?
It is released now. It is official. My Star Speak Volumes is now available, so yeah.
All right. So I wanted to play one of the tracks from that. I was going to play Run Free. Will you do a little intro to this song?
Sure. Run Free is a Marauders song. I was trying to go through and think about, you know, what I hadn't written about and what other people didn't write about as much. And I love the Marauders. I think the idea of these four best friends sort of going out and getting themselves into all sorts of trouble and having a great time during school is really neat. And it helps that I have three best friends who are also, you know, we're all guys, and we have a nickname for what we call ourselves. And, you know, we go out and get into trouble and have a lot of fun as well. So it really hits close to home for me what the Marauders were up to. And, so I thought that was kind of fun. I also think it's neat when you set yourself in different time periods and allow perceptions to change. Because obviously, at this point, they don't hate Peter. They like Peter, and Peter's one of their best friends. So I like being able to think about Peter in a positive way that obviously changes so much, you know, not just a few years later.
Yep. All right, well, here's Mark Does His Equal, Run Free.
I've got my best friends at my side. There's no way we're gonna get caught. We are going for a ride, and our freedom is what we've got. Because we're gonna run free tonight. No one's holding us back tonight. With the wind in our fur and the falling to guide us, we're gonna run free tonight. We're gonna run free tonight. Nothing's keeping us down tonight. We're up to no good and we're just getting started. We're gonna run free tonight.
A big black dog, a shaggy werewolf, a slippery rat and mighty stag. Through the village, and the rest is in the bag.
Because we're gonna run free tonight. No one's holding us back tonight. With the wind in our fur and the full moon to guide us, we're gonna run free tonight. We're gonna run free tonight. Nothing's keeping us down tonight. We're up to no good and we're just getting started. We're gonna run free tonight.
I've got my best friends at my side. There's no way we're gonna get caught.
We're gonna run free tonight. No one's keeping us back tonight. With the wind in our fur and the full moon to guide us, we're gonna run free tonight. We're gonna run free tonight. Nothing's keeping us down tonight. We're up to no good and we're just getting started. We're gonna run free tonight.
All right, welcome back to Rockline. In the studio with us tonight is Mark from Mark Does His Equal. Mark, I know that you had just put out your new CD, My Scars Will Speak Volumes, but you also have another CD, a split one out with myself, called Read Books or I'll Curse You.
That's correct.
Tell me a little about what you did to remix your songs on this album.
Well, I've played in rock bands for a long time, and so I have a lot of friends here in San Diego who play music, and they all think that what I'm doing with the Mark Does His Equal is really fun, and for the most part, they think it's kind of funny as well, but not in a bad way. And so when I started doing the project, there were actually some people who were kind of disappointed that I decided to go the solo acoustic route, because they wanted to be involved. And so when you approached me about the idea of doing a split EP, I thought it sounded like a great idea, but I knew I wasn't going to have the material for it, and I wanted to be able to put out the record this month. So what I decided to do was I took four of the acoustic songs off of My Scars Speak Volumes, and I went in with a couple of my buddies. That's Joe and Ryan. Joe's a drummer, and Ryan's an all-around I-play-everything kind of guy. And we went into the studio and re-recorded four of the tracks off My Scars Speak Volumes with electric instruments and distortion and a full drum kit and all that kind of stuff, and kind of turn them into, you know, pop punk rock songs. So that was, it was really, really fun to do. I got to work with a different engineer because Ryan's also an engineer. So instead of working with my normal guy, I worked with Ryan, and, he's got a really different ear and a very different idea of what things should sound like, which is really cool. And, yeah, so we ended up doing that and came out with, four, well, I think came out really well tracks.
Well, I think they sounded really cool. I know that we're donating the proceeds to a couple different charities, but most of them are going to First Book. You want to tell everybody a little bit about what First Book is?
Well, First Book is a charity program that puts a book into the hands of an underprivileged child. So in the event that a kid's parents can't afford to buy that kid books, First Book makes sure they have a book of their own so that they can be reading and growing up reading and learning to love to read, which we all know is one of the most important things out there. So
yes, that is what Wizard Rock is all about. And I know that I got the privilege to do the title track from that one. I'm not sure if you actually got to hear the song Read Books, or I'm going to curse you yet, but I actually wrote that song while I was sitting in line waiting for the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix midnight release. So there was like thousands and thousands of kids, and I just sat there going, you know what, these kids should be reading. But I basically, the reason I got into Wizard Rock is because I want to, you know, show my children that, you know, reading is what inspires people to become great, because that's all I did when I was a kid. I didn't play video games. I didn't watch TV. I read the Hardy Boys, and that's what I grew up on. So, I mean, what basically, you know, made you get into Wizard Rock?
I got into Wizard Rock kind of sideways, actually, because I've been a musician since I was about 11, and I've been playing piano since I was 3. So I've been playing music for a long time. And like you, actually, it's funny you mentioned Hardy Boys, because I read all of the Hardy Boys novels. And when I was about 6, my dad started reading the first one to me, and he got through one chapter before I took it out of his hands and started reading it myself, because he was doing it too slowly, and I wanted to read it faster. So, you know, so I read Hardy Boys, and so I've always read, and of course I read a lot of the things that people say, you know, if you're a fan of Harry Potter and you're still waiting for the next book, go read The Phantom Tollbooth, go read This is Crispy and the Rats of Nim, go read the Chronicles of Narnia. I read all of those books when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So, when I discovered Harry Potter, which was right before Goblet of Fire came out, I fell in love with the series, and I mean, we all know that it's impossible to not. So I started reading Harry Potter. I got really into it. And then after The Order of the Phoenix came out and Prisoner of Azkaban came out in theaters, I went and saw the film, and I had some questions. And this was in the infancy of MySpace. And I already had a MySpace account. And so I put together a group on MySpace called the Harry Potter Book and Film Club, because I just had a bunch of questions that I wanted to ask about the movie. So I asked those questions, people joined the group, eventually it grew way out of my control and was no longer something I could handle on my own. So I branched out into the world of the actual internet and started my own Harry Potter fan site, which lasted for quite a while, and was a lot of fun. And eventually it just sort of got overcome by the fact that there are literally, I'm not joking about this number, 2 million Harry Potter fan sites on the web.
Oh, yeah.
And, but before that, I decided to go to Lumos. So I had, you know, planned the whole trip and gotten it all together and went off to Lumos. While I was in Lumos, I not only had an amazing time going to conferences and meeting all sorts of people, I met two very tall, very striking girls named Megan and Mallory, who were constantly holding a camera and a boom microphone. So you go, what on earth are these girls doing? And it turns out they're making a documentary about something called Wizard Rock. And I go, what on earth is that? And you meet these two girls, and it's impossible to not learn everything there is to know about Wizard Rock.
Right.
They are like Liz from the Wizard Rockopedia and Tess from realwizardrock.com. I mean, these people just know everything there is to know about it. So we go off to lunch and we're hanging out and we're talking about Harry Potter, and they start telling me about Wizard Rock, and I think, well, this is something I should totally do. So that's how I wound up in Wizard Rock, was through the Wizard Rock documentary and them telling me about it, and you know, combining the fact that I love Harry Potter and have been reading Harry Potter for a long time and I'm a big fan with the fact that I'm a musician. It just all sort of worked out.
Oh, yeah, that's a better story than mine.
I don't know, wanting to help out your kids is pretty cool.
Who's your favorite character from the Harry Potter books? If you have to, like, name it down to one character.
I have to name it down to one. It depends on the day, because it's either Sirius Black or Hermione Granger. But it would probably be Sirius Black in a pinch. I love Sirius Black. So,
well, he's got a great character. He's got a great persona about him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why is Hermione your hero?
Well, I like smart girls. I think smart girls are really cool, and I always have. And so I really like the fact that Hermione is unabashedly smart. There's actually going to be a conference, a presentation at Prophecy about this specific issue, about how Hermione is unabashedly smart and unabashedly strong, and how in fantasy novels often female characters are relegated to helping roles, and how Hermione is very much her own person and independent. So I did that in a character, and there's also the fact that I've always sort of thought she was hot. I mean, even reading the books, I just always thought she was hot.
All right, well, that's going to lead us into the next song. Here is Hermione's My Hero by Marked as His Equal.
Hermione's my hero. She beat the devil's snare. She always has the answers when no one has a prayer. Hermione always helps out when evil's out to get you. But if you want to copy homework, you know that she won't let you. Hermione's my hero.
Marry me.
All right, well, welcome back to Rockline. We have Mark with us in the studio, and we just listened to Hermione's My Hero. We just had a little discussion on why Hermione is Mark's hero. She's a smart girl. She's very strong, and I completely agree with him on that fact. Now, how many songs did you put on your CD, and is this the first CD that you have ever done, or did you do other CDs pre-Wizard Rock?
There are 12 songs on my Scars Peak volumes, almost all of which were written in about a 2.5 month period. I had written Hermione's My Hero, I had written The Ballad of Sirius Black, and I had written the lyric to Ancient Magic before I started the major writing session. But then everything else got written and recorded in 2.5 months, which was a lot of work. This is the first full-length CD I've ever put out. I've done a couple of EPs before that. I did an EP with a band I am in called The Eversong, which is 6 songs long, and I did a solo EP about 5 years ago that was some original material and some cover material. But that wasn't a serious EP. That never got mastered. It was just a bunch of tracks that we sort of threw together, recorded on a 4-track. So this is my first real album, which is really, really exciting. Yeah,
it's fun to put out an album. I've put out, 5 with the Cruciatus Curse, 1 solo album, 2 with my previous band Cryptic, and then 1 back when I was, 15, called for Forsaken. It was a Christian rock band. So, yeah,
wow.
It's been a long time, but I mean, recording is my thing. I love recording. I have never once performed an actual show, except for I do karaoke, all the time at the bars, and people look at me really funny when I sing about Harry Potter, but they're drunk, so it kind of goes over. When I redid the Big and Rich country song Holy Water into Harry Potter, people were a little amazed and looked at me funny, but it got a real good response on MySpace. But people just don't understand that stuff here in Green Bay. All right, well, we're going to go into your song, Face the Dragon, which I enjoy very much since my nickname is The Dragon. So we're going to jump right into this song. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Face the Dragon. I've always liked the idea that in book 4, when Harry is so busy and he's got so much going on, that one of the things that is most concerning to him is finding a date to the dance. I remember being 14 and how scary it is to talk to girls and figure out, oh my gosh, I have to ask this girl somewhere, and if she says no, I'm going to die, and how scary it is. And I read somewhere that someone said in high school, I think it's actually easier to face the dragon. And I always thought that was a really funny idea. And when I write, I don't start with one thing or the other. I normally start with a single idea that will grow into a song. And so the idea here was for me to, I wanted to write, this song about, having to go to the dance and having already fought the Hungarian horntail and, trying to figure that out. So I was working on that, and I worked out some lyrics around that idea. And then I started to write, and the song came out a lot moodier than I expected it to. I figured it would be sort of like a happy, poppy, romp. And if you listen to the lyrics, it sort of is. But then you listen to the music, and it's like, whoa, where did that come from? And I liked the dichotomy there. So that's where Face the Dragon comes from. I think the poor guy, I totally feel him in book 4, where, I would have rather fought a dragon myself. So I understand.
I completely agree. All right, well, here's Face the Dragon, marked as his equal.
Not all. How do you get one alone to chat? that. So I don't think that I want to go to this dance. I think I'd rather face the dragon. I think I'd rather face the dragon. Cause a dragon, see, I can't figure out. Sure, they're big and mean, and they're strong, and they spout flames. They burn things up and they smash them apart. But at least they don't go playing with my heart. So I don't think that I want to go to this dance. I think I'd rather face the dragon. I think I'd rather face the dragon. Something's got to give. I don't wanna be alone on the dance floor by myself. How can this be so hard? When did everything become about this night? My friends and I have seen so much. We faced horrors no one can imagine. Why is talking to a girl I like harder than any fight? I swear the next girl I see I'll just ask. There's no way tougher than the second task. Then again, what if the one I ask says no? What if she laughs at me and tells me to just go away? I don't think that I want to go to this dance. I think I'd rather face the dragon. I think I'd rather face the dragon. I think I'd rather face the dragon. I always rather face the dragon.
Wand? Do you like broomsticks? Do you want to win a magic wand? Then you need to stop on down to Elevan's, makers of fine handcrafted magic wands. Make sure you visit them online at www.alivans.com. Make sure you take a sneak peek at their hot new products like Dragonology, the complete book of dragons, Wizardology, the book of secrets of Merlin, the Crookshakes plush doll, Fox the Phoenix plush doll, the Triwizard Cump lamp, Hogwarts fabric wall scroll, the Harry Potter Weasley clock, the Leaky Cauldron metal sign, like a Hogwarts Express wooden sign. The Marauder's Map wall scroll. A wizard in a kitchen book. MuggleNet.com's What Will Happen in Harry Potter 7. And much, much more. So remember, visit them at www.alivans.com. Elevans, fine makers of fine handcrafted magic wands. Visit them online now.
All right, well, welcome back. We are here in the studio, and we are here with Mark. And Mark, why don't you run through a little bit about what you're going to be doing at Prophecy and what Prophecy is pretty much about for the people that don't understand.
Well, just to give a little bit of background, Prophecy is the, I believe, 10th in a series of conferences that are put on by an educational program. And these conferences originally started because they're actually places where teachers can go and get teaching credits. You can learn how to present things in the classroom and things like that. That's where the whole idea started. And, of course, after only a couple of years, it got sort of overtaken by fangirls and fanboys because people just wanted to go to Harry Potter-related events. And so now it's sort of a combination of the two. During the day, there are actual lectures and presentations and roundtables and workshops that are serious academic subjects having to do with Harry Potter. And then at night, there are, you know, informal programming events like dances and, you know, Wizard Rock performances. And there's actually a knitting workshop that I'm thinking about going to because I thought that might be kind of fun. You know, just random stuff like that. So it's pretty fun. I went to Lumos last year and I had a blast. When I came home from Lumos the next day, I signed up for Prophecy because I had so much fun at Lumos. So that's what's going on there. And so basically what I'm going to be doing is I get there on the conference runs from Thursday to Sunday, and I'm going to get there on Thursday morning, and I'm going to go down, I'm going to register, I'm going to hang out, I'm going to go to the welcome feast with everybody, and then I'm going to play a show that night after Harry and the Potter's play. And then on Friday, I'm going to try desperately to get myself out of bed at a reasonable hour and try and make it to some of the conferences. And then I'm going to go see some more Wizard Rock on Friday night. Saturday, I'm going to do the same thing as Friday, although I suspect one of those days I will definitely sleep in. And see some more Wizard Rock on Saturday night. And then there's the Decade of Enchantment Ball on Saturday night, which is sort of our Yule Ball there at Prophecy. And then Sunday, I hang out even more. There's a leaving feast, and then I head home. So
that
should be pretty crazy.
Sounds like a fun-filled trip. I really wish I could
not
go.
Not a whole lot of sleep. Not a whole lot of sleep will happen, I believe.
Oh, who needs sleep?
Yeah. I can sleep when I get home, right?
Yes. All right, well, now we are going to play Ancient Magic Pain, which was obviously your song Ancient Magic, remixed with my song Pain and Strife for the Read Books or I'll Curse You split CD. It was remixed by DJ Ashesy. I don't know if you had heard of him, but he's one of the Wizard Trance, Wizard Dance artists out there, and he's actually
awesome.
Very good. Signed to Do-It-Yourself Records, which basically promotes you to do it yourself. So,
sure.
We are now going to listen to Ancient Magic Pain. Now, what inspired you to do? I know you did all, like, was it four different voices on that track? How long did that take you, and what inspired you to do that type of sound? Because that's got, like, an ancient sound to it, and it sounds very, very cool.
Well, I've been performing professionally in choirs for, let's see, about 6 years now, 7 years. I got my first job when I was 20.
Really?
And one of the choirs I performed in was when I was living in L.A., and it was called the Masters Consort, and it was an all-male a cappella group that did a Compline service on Sunday nights, which Compline is all men, and it's sung throughout, but the men sing all the different parts. And it was really wonderful, and we did a lot of incredible music. And I went to my engineer at one point before I was doing Marches is Equal, and I said, hey, you know, we should try a thing where we do one of these pieces that I'm doing up in L.A., but I'll do all the voices myself. And he said, okay, that sounds like fun. So we tried it out, and it was really effective. We thought it was really neat, and it was a lot of fun to do. So when it came time to do the album, I wanted to do something special for the closer. And I thought, at that point was, obviously it was a Harry Ginny shipper because Half Blood Prince had come out, so we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And we knew that Harry had decided to say goodbye to Ginny. And so I thought that was a really nice and touching subject. And so I wrote some lyrics and then hunkered down and wrote music for about 2 weeks because I wrote all the parts out. And then I went to the studio, and the studio part of it, just the recording part, probably took about 7 hours.
Oh, wow.
Because you gotta get them right. All the parts have to be exactly right. So it takes a while. You gotta do a few takes of each one, and, you know, it's not easy, but it's a ton of fun, and the end result, I think, is so cool.
It sounds unbelievable. Maybe I'd get a better, feedback out of my songs if I took that much time. I don't write down any lyrics ever. I do the music and stand in front of the microphone, and whatever comes to my head, that's what goes into the song.
All right.
I should really start writing lyrics down. There's an idea. All right, well, here is Ancient Magic Pain from the CD Read Books or I'll Curse You. You can pre-order at myspace.com/readbooksorillcurseyou.
Our time together has been far too short. Though what we have been through will last us a lifetime, with distance and time our only folly. We toiled on, we soldiered on, to find ourselves in each other's arms. There is ancient magic running through our veins tonight. The kind that protects and heals, as only those who have it know. And as I go to face the destiny ahead of me, I know the smell of flowers will bring me home.
Shit, it was in the glass, right? Welcome, all ye witches and wizards, and muggles too. We have Harry Potter merchandise throughout our store. Be sure to check out our Harry Potter's collectible section. We also have Harry and the Order of Phoenix merchandise arriving soon. You will also get a free wizard bookmark with every order. And Death Eaters, don't go away, we have a shop for you too. The Order of Merlin is proud to support U.S. workers and cottage industries. Most of our handmade wooden wands, all of our wand scabbards and wand boxes, wizard witch brooms, and custom-made wizard clothing are made in the USA. And don't worry, if you do not have a credit card and want to order faster than by mailing a check or money order, you can pay with your verified PayPal account. Be sure to add shipping and handling charges and click the icon on the bottom of their webpage. Please visit them online. They are orderofmerlin.com.
All right, welcome back to Rockline. Mark is in the studio here, and we are going to now talk about the epilogue at the end of Book 7. 19 years later, why don't you pick it up from there, Mark? Give me your thoughts on everything that transpired in that epilogue.
Well, the one thing I was disappointed in, just to start off with that, was that we didn't find out anything about where George was. I was desperate to see how George had handled losing Fred. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I thought it was really cool. And I have kind of an advantage because I saw the first half of the J.K. Rowling interview where she answered some questions. So I like the fact that she said that Harry and Ron went on to completely transform the Auror office. Like, I thought that was really appropriate. Mm-hmm. Hermione was high up in the misuse of magic office, I believe. Or no, the Office of Magical Law Enforcement. That's what she was doing. But I thought it was great. I thought the kids were all great. I thought it was really neat that we got to see that Neville wound up being a professor. I've heard this a lot, and I think I sort of share this feeling that it was kind of cheesy, but I'm still really glad that she gave it to us. Because it would have left still too many questions if we hadn't had it.
Well, yeah, well, there's still that 19-year period that, you know, people, fan fiction is going to fill in, you know, for the next, you know, what, 100 years. People are going to be, I mean, it's like Star Wars. People are writing books and books and books. He can make another 20 movies off of the stuff that, you know, people have written about Star Wars, and I'm almost positive that's what's going to happen with the Harry Potter series. Maybe not necessarily Harry Potter himself, but the world of Harry Potter, and now that it's this, other people are going to rise up. You know, there are going to be other, you know, Dark Lords rising up, and I had personally thought it was going to be Draco, but then towards the end of, you know, Book 6, I kind of understood that, you know, there had to be some redemption there, and I kind of liked that they nodded to each other, but they weren't overly friendly, because that would have just been like,
right. Okay,
what's going on? What did you think of the name for his son?
For Scorpius?
Yeah.
I thought it was appropriate, but I mean, you know, like if you think about Lucius and then you think about Draco, Scorpius kind of makes sense. My dad, who read the book right after I did, was complaining. He thought that Scorpius sounded more vicious than either of the other two names, but I always thought that Lucius and Draco both sounded pretty nasty, so I figure Scorpius just kind of went along with it.
Well, Draco's just Latin. Go ahead. Draco's just Latin for dragon anyway, so, but Lucius, I never caught the meaning of that one.
See, I always compare it to Lucifer.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go. maybe that's where she was going with that one.
That was always sort of my thought.
I would have liked to have known Draco married. Was it the girl that was always following around, you know, throughout Hogwarts, or was it, you know, someone else?
Candy?
Yeah.
I kind of like that she didn't tell us who it was. I like that we just found out that he had a wife. And the reason why is because I think if he had married a pureblood, she would have mentioned that.
Yes, that is
and
very
the
true.
Fact that she didn't suggests to me that Draco may have actually moved out of his way of thinking enough that he might have married someone who wasn't pureblood. Which I think, I mean, clearly he was still pompous and clearly he was still rich. But he also clearly respected the Potters and respected the Weasleys and had moved on a little bit. And the idea that he might have married someone who wasn't who his father would have approved of back when they were aligned with Voldemort, I thought was really neat.
Oh,
yeah. So that's sort of where I went with it.
I completely agree. How'd you like the name Albus Severus Potter?
You know, it was funny. I was talking to a friend yesterday who was complaining about that name, saying, look, I understand why she wanted to give the kids the names of the headmasters, but she has to name one of them Albus Severus. It doesn't even sound good. And I'm inclined to agree. I understand the point. It was certainly very moving. It was one of the times when I was reading the book that I teared up. But it's certainly not a name I would have wanted to have on the middle school playground. I'll tell you that.
Right. Now, in your honest opinion, during the middle, towards the end of the book, were you upset at Dumbledore?
No.
Upset at Dumbledore. Even when you found out that he was pretty much setting Harry up as a sacrificial lamb?
Yes.
I for a split second there, I'm like, you know what, that's kind of mean that he didn't really show any emotion when Severus is like, you set him up to be, you know, killed, and that Severus was showing emotion that, you know, Potter, who he had, you know, secretly been trying to protect his entire life because of his love for Lily, and, you know, he got angry with Dumbledore over that. But then I understood Dumbledore's thinking that, you know, Harry would have wanted it this way. Harry, you know, would have, if it would have been left up to him, he would have sacrificed himself just because that's who he was.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if I would have just been coming into this series at book 7 and read that, I would have been completely, I would have hated Dumbledore. But
that could be true, although at the same time, what I see is, I see Dumbledore, okay, it's kind of like how I look at Remus and Tonks. I feel like Remus and Tonks decided to go and fight at Hogwarts instead of go and hide and protect their kid because they felt like they were doing something bigger than them, that they made the decision. And I would never, ever, ever say that anybody's making a bad decision because they decide that they're not going to put themselves in danger to protect their own children.
Oh,
I think
yes.
That's a perfectly reasonable response. But I also think that deciding there are things that are bigger than my family and there are things that are more important than my family is also a valid decision and worthwhile. And I feel like people have the right to make that decision for themselves. I think Dumbledore had Harry's number. I think he knew that Harry would make that decision if it came right down to it. And I feel like the reason why Dumbledore didn't tell Harry was because he knew that Harry needed to come into this stuff on his own. There was lots of information Dumbledore kept from Harry specifically so Harry would be able to make his own decisions and learn on his own. Because if he didn't do that, he never would have given it everything he had. And Harry needed to put it all out there in order to solve these problems and defeat Voldemort. So I felt like Dumbledore made the right decision, and I certainly understand deciding, you know what, guys, the wizarding world is more important than one boy's life, even the boy that I really, really care about. And, you know, I mean, let's put him out there, let's see what he can do, and if he can figure out a way to make this happen without dying himself, good for him. But, you know, if he can't, we're going to have to face the fact that the destruction of our entire society is, you know, not worth saving. It's one kid who will die if the entire society is destroyed anyway.
Yeah.
So,
I really like the way that she made Dumbledore human. Like he had his faults. Like his, you know, he's just like everybody else. He did have a thirst for power, and that's why he, you know, tried on the cursed ring right away because.
Yep.
You know, he had that thirst for power, and I loved the way that she had started that in book 6, and then completely, you know, now we understand that, because I was wondering throughout book 7 that if he had, you know, broke the Horcrux with the sword, and it had burnt his hand, I didn't understand that, and then all of a sudden it came to it, and then I'm like, okay, now I get it. And my theory throughout, right after book 6 was that, you know, Snape was good guy, and that he had to do it because of the unbreakable vow. And it didn't even cross my mind that Dumbledore was already dying. But that was a great way to tie it up. I think she's probably one of the greatest authors of, you know, any age. She's right up there with, you know, Tolkien and, you know, C.S. Lewis.
She definitely wrote us an amazing series, and I agree with you that tying it up the way she did, I thought was perfect. And you know, it's funny, I've sort of dealt with Dumbledore being human since book 5, you know, when he makes the first mistake that we ever see, and didn't give Harry all the information that he needed, and I always liked that aspect of Dumbledore. And then of course in book 6, when Harry's in his lessons, And Dumbledore saying, look, now we're moving into guesswork. This is where I don't know things anymore, and we're just going to have to try and figure it out. I thought that was really cool, and I thought it was very telling of Dumbledore. And I like the fact that he'd made mistakes in his past, and I like the fact that we got to see that and that it mattered. And I agree. I think that the fact that he tried on that ring because he wanted to see if it worked was pretty cool.
All right, well, we're going to jump into this next song, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce it, but will you give us a little background on this song?
Yeah, this song is about Fleur. It's called Elle est une ville. I speak French, and so I wanted to make use of that, and what better way to do that than with a song about Fleur. And I thought that at the end of Half-Blood Prince, when Fleur really proves herself as more than just a vapid waste, that she deserved her own song. And I like the French cabaret feel of the song as well. I listen to a fair amount of like French cabaret music, both from the turn of the century and modern, and because I just love it. And so I like that sort of feel to it. So yeah, so this is Elle est une ville.
All the way from Beaubaton, with the way that she looked, so different than the girls here. Could she possibly be what she appears, attracting boys like flies? I can't believe my eyes. She's got to be a Vila, it's plain to see. What her hair and smile and eyes are doing to me. And every time I see her, I get dizzy. She's a Vila. For Ron couldn't help but ask her out, and when she said no, he started to pout. But not everyone is so impressed. The Hogwarts girls wish she'd give it a rest. She's got to be a Vila, not sure what I see. Is that pretty face hiding something that's ugly? Still every time I see her I get dizzy. She's a Vila. Now she's got her claws sunk into Bill. Will she marry him? Well, I think she will. Then Bill got hurt. The times have changed, but Fleur remains the same. Turns out she's a lovely girl. You said t'avere être tout à fait une surprise. Quel vraiment pourrait aimer une Weasley? Elle peut aimer la manière qu'elle regarde, mais elle aime ses amis beaucoup davantage. Est-elle ce que nous avions recherché? Est-elle ce que nous avions recherché? Got to be a Vila, it's plain to see that her looks aren't hiding anything from me. And I'm glad that she's as beautiful as she seems. She's a Vila.
All right, welcome back to Rockline. Okay, we are now going to discuss the death of Voldemort. I didn't think it was as flashy. I was a little shocked at how sudden it was. I thought it would have been a huge thing with like him, like maybe like the Wicked Witch of the West. No, I'm dying. Something like that. But it was just boom. He was dead. It was nothing.
Yep.
I thought there would have been like this huge celebration, something like that. But you know, it was just kind of like a moment, and then everybody went on to, okay, well, now we've got to assess the situation. Everybody's dead, type of thing.
Yeah.
What are your
thoughts? I agree. I thought it was kind of neat. You know, it's funny, the scene leading up to it reminded me a lot of traditional samurai combat. You know, when samurai used to fight in feudal Japan, the groups of samurai would come out to a battlefield, but they wouldn't all fight each other. They would select one warrior from either side, and those two warriors would fight to the death.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever won, their side was the winner. And it was a very economical way of doing things because, A, you got to choose your best fighter and put them out there, and, you know, that was your best shot you had of winning. And also, you know, back then, population was a serious issue, and they couldn't afford to lose 100 or 150 men from a village of 1,000 people. And so if you only lost one, it wasn't as much of a deal in terms of, you know, getting the harvest in that year and things like that. So it was a really neat way of fighting, but it was also very honor-based. It was like, okay, well, no one's going to cheat here because we're all so honorable. And that the fact that Harry and Voldemort were walking in a circle, surrounded by people who both had very strong feelings about the outcome of this battle, but all of them stood back and let this fight happen between the two of them because they all knew it was so important that it happened that way. And in a way, it was honorable on both sides. I thought that was kind of cool. And personally, I'm sort of glad that Voldemort didn't go out in a big blaze of glory and, you know, screaming and yelling and doing all this crazy stuff, and rather just, and it was over. You know, it was that fast because there was no way he could win. Harry had already beaten him at that point. So we didn't need a big, you know, thing. Harry had beaten Voldemort the moment Harry decided to start calling him Riddle.
Yes.
That was the moment.
How would you have liked to have been in the room thinking that Harry had died and all of a sudden he comes out from underneath the cloak and just reveals himself to everybody? How would you have felt being standing in that room? How would that have made?
I would have freaked out. Quite honestly, because, you know, anybody coming back from the dead would have freaked me out. There's actually, you know, kind of an interesting panel going on at, or I think it's a presentation at Prophecy, which is going to discuss the connection of Christian mythology to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows because of Harry's seeming resurrection. And the tie there with, you know, Christ's resurrection, which I think would be quite cool to look at. So
Yes. I really loved the fact that she did kill Harry, but it only killed the part of him that, you know, was bad. So now do you think, you know, growing up, those 19 years in between, you know, from the end of the book to the epilogue, was Harry like a completely different person now that he didn't have that side of him?
No, like, I imagine that he wasn't. I suspect he was the same guy. And I think Dumbledore taught us why. You know, it's your choices that make you who you are. And Harry never stops choosing. I'm not always convinced he made the right decisions, and I certainly don't think he made the decisions I would have made, but I'm not Harry. But he never stops choosing for himself. Yes, he could speak Parseltongue. But that didn't mean he had to be evil. He could choose to not be evil. And, you know, I think Dumbledore made that very clear. And I think Dumbledore was right. And so, no, I don't think that Harry was ever really that influenced by Voldemort's presence in his body. I think Harry was constantly choosing to be the person he wanted to be, even though in book 5 that was an annoying brat and, you know, in book 6 kind of an impetuous idiot. But, you know, I mean, he never stopped choosing. So I think Harry, 19 years later, would have been the same, like, fun-loving, you know, adventurous guy, and I bet he looked at having kids as a real adventure. I bet he just absolutely loved having little kids around.
I'm sure. I had always visioned Harry, like, at the end of everything, to have been either a teacher at Hogwarts, like a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, or possibly even, uh-huh. you know, headmaster later on, because when he taught the DA, he took control, and it was like he was meant to do that. That's why I visioned him. That's why I loved the fact that Neville had stood up and taken charge when he was pretty much the only, you know, leader left at, you know, Hogwarts, and then taking mm-hmm. charge and killing Nagini like that, I thought was an excellent way that she brings him up from being this, you know, guy that can't do anything. He's bumbling around to, at the end of book 7, he's, you know, one of the main heroes of the book.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I thought that was awesome. A lot of people have complained that Neville didn't get to kill Bellatrix, but boy, I didn't care. I thought Neville showed himself proud that day.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, he went and got Nagini at great peril to his own life. I mean, he was under serious threat there, and just did it, and he did it purely based on the fact that he trusted Harry, which I found really admirable. So I agree. I think Neville was a real champ. And I also kind of agree with you. I could have totally seen Harry going back and teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts. But, you know, I don't think that chance has gone away from him. I think he can still do that. You know, he's only, what, 36 in the epilogue? So
yeah.
He's still got plenty of time. And I like the fact that he completely, you know, like remade the R office, that he and Ron went in and said, okay, guys, this is what you're doing all wrong, and this is what we're going to change. And it seems to me that that's sort of a perfect thing for someone in Harry's position to have gone and done before going back and sharing his knowledge with more kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, we are actually going to do No Master at the Helm, which, as I understand, is a song about Dumbledore. So if you want to give us a little insight into what prompted you into this song and what it's about.
Well, you know, my sister wrote this song, and she's an incredible author and writer. She writes sci-fi and fantasy stories and screenplays, and she writes wonderful poetry, and she had never written a song before, and the part I struggle with songwriting the most is definitely lyric writing, and so I love it when people give me lyrics. And we were talking about it, and she really liked what I was doing with the band and said, well, I'd like to write a song, and I'd love to hear a song about Dumbledore's death. And I said, okay, well, write me one. So she did, and she sent it off to me, and I heard that, I saw the lyrics, and I just immediately started hearing it in my head, and I picked up my guitar, and I started playing that riff and started singing, and it was recorded within a couple of days. So that's sort of where that song came from. And if you want more details on the lyrics, you're going to have to ask her.
All right, well, that's what Wizard Rock's all about, bringing families together. All right, well, here is No Master at the Helm by Marked as His Equal.
Lit up the sky. Even the teachers trembled. No one could answer why. We know the end is coming. The darkness has us all. We know the end is coming. We saw Dumbledore fall. We saw Dumbledore fall. Potter may have saved us. He pushed forward for the win. But nothing will ever be the same now that evil's been let in. We know the end is coming, the darkness has a soul. We know the end is coming, we saw Dumbledore fall. saw Dumbledore fall. Is this boy enough to keep us safe from Voldemort, Horcruxes, and Snape? Or will we tumble one by one until his deathly plan is done? A year of hopes, loves, and dreams gone in a single flame. No master left to guide us, who's really to blame? We know the end is coming, the darkness has a soul. We know the end is coming, we saw Dumbledore fall. We saw Dumbledore fall. We saw Dumbledore.
Are you looking for treasures inspired by the world of Harry Potter? Then you've come to the right place. TheNobleCollection.com has everything a wizard could possibly need. Illuminating wands, Harry Potter inspired wands, Hogwarts bookmarks, miniature Hedwig and cage, a time turner, Hermione Granger's wand, even the Dark Lord Voldemort's wand. You can get a miniature replica of Hogwarts, even the prophecy. You can get all kinds of Hulk scarves. You can get anything you could possibly want, like Lucius Malfoy's walking stick, the Hungarian horntail bookend. You can even get the famous wizard chest, or the Mirror of Erised. Please, go visit thenoblecollection.com for anything you want. The treasures inspired by the world of Harry Potter. Visit them online at thenoblecollection.com.
So we are back here on Rockline with Mark. We've had a very interesting conversation. It's been all over the place. First actual Rockline where we're interviewing other people. We're going to wrap things up here real quick. We're going to actually leave you with two songs. The first one is going to be She Kissed Me, and the second one is going to be The Ballad of Sirius Black. Now, you can buy Mark's brand new CD, My Scars Speak Volumes, on his MySpace page, which is myspace.com/marked as his equal.
That's correct.
Now, next week's band that we're going to be having on here is Danny Dementor, who is a recent newcomer. And the tradition that we are starting here is we're going to be asking a question for next week's band. So ask away any question that you want to leave for Danny.
Well, my question is going to be the same that I ask almost every wizard rock band, which is, what made you decide to get into wizard rock? So that's what I want to find out from Danny Dementor next week.
All right. Well, I know he's had a little trouble with some Lord of the Rings artists, but he was the bigger man and stood up and said, you know what, let's put a truce to this and let's just have some fun making music. So, Mark, I would love to thank you for being a guest on this week's Rockline.
And, that was my pleasure. Thank you.
Not a problem. And I hope everybody enjoys. Tune in next week for Danny Dementor. And we are going to leave you with two songs by Marked as Ezekiel. As always, I am Denny for Rockline.
For the first time this year, I saw her in a different light. With periwinkle blue dress robes, made her look alright. She reached up and she kissed me, but what does that imply? I never knew I could feel like this when someone said goodbye. Yeah, she kissed me and the world spun around inside my head. I didn't know what to say or do. The only thing I know is nothing will be the same ever again. And that's all because of you.
daggers in the mistletoe above our heads. And even though my brain was numb, I couldn't be misled. Yeah, she kissed me and the world spun around inside my head. I didn't know what to say to. The only thing I know is nothing would be the same ever again. And that's all because of you. I don't know why it makes me feel like this. There's no reason I can see. But sometimes I wish they'd never go away. Then I wish they'd let me leave. Thought about her all year long, I couldn't help it at all. I knew Ron would never forgive me, but I couldn't help but fall. When we won the Quidditch Cup, she threw her arms around me. With that blazing look on her face, she started to kiss me madly. Yeah, she kissed me and the world spun around inside my head. I didn't know what to say or do. The only thing I know is nothing will be the same. That's all because of you. Yeah, she kissed me and the world spun around inside my head. I didn't know what to say or do. The only thing I know is nothing will be the same ever again. And that's all because of you. And that's all because of you. And it's all because of you.
I know that you never really knew your father. He was taken from all of us way too soon. He was strong and good, and he was an amazing seeker, and one of the best damn wizards that I ever knew. He loved his friends. He would help out any of us if we were in need. And he loved your mother with a fire like you wouldn't believe. But I can't quite describe exactly how he felt about you. There was so much pride and joy and expectation every time he looked at you. And Harry, you remind me of him. Every single day,
every single day,
the goodness of your heart and what you do. And if he were here right now to see the man that you're becoming,
the man that you're becoming,
he would be so proud of you. He would be so proud of you. Harry, you know that I'm not the man that I once was. Years in Azkaban will do that to a soul. But my strongest guilt comes from letting James and Lily down. It was a bad choice that I made, and I'll never forgive myself. But I swear this to you, I will be by your side forevermore. My wand and back are yours to take.
I'll fight for you, and I'll fight for your father. Because to make sure you're not hurt, I would gladly give my life away. And Harry, you remind me of him every single day. The goodness of your heart and what you do. And if he were here right now to see the man that you're becoming, he would be so proud of you. He would be so proud of you. Proud of you. James would be so proud of you. Harry, I know that you never really knew your father. He was taken from all of us way too soon.